I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Hunting Seasons, the podcast that dares to binge watch, deep dive, and break down a season of television. Each and every episode. I'm Broderick Gordis.
I'm Damask Cleary.
And today we'll be discussing Loki Season 1. Damask Cleary, how are you?
Oh, look. I love to be honest with our listeners. I'm not doing well. The old depression is back in force. I'm just bopping along, doing my best. How are you, Brod?
I'm not brilliant, to be honest, either. Having a real shit last couple of days.
Yeah.
To put in context what's happening here in Australia at the moment, Victoria in particular, I started my 2-week holidays. Today is Thursday night. On Wednesday yesterday, I started my 2 weeks of vacation time. And immediately upon doing that, Victoria has had a problem with some COVID outbreaks. When Victoria has COVID outbreaks, it goes into lockdown, or at least other states start dealing with that. Your state, WA, said, nah, Victorians can't come over anymore without doing 2 weeks of quarantine when they arrive. So that means my plan to come and visit you in Western Australia next week is not happening, which was the original bad news, and that was bad enough. Today, Victoria's COVID situation's got a little bit worse, so they're going into a 5-day lockdown. But it turns out, not just only are we going to a 5-day lockdown, it turns out I was at an exposure site, that being the Melbourne Cricket Ground, to watch the footy last weekend. Not even my team. I went with friends to watch two teams that I don't support. Big mistake. This is what I get for going to a Carlton Cats game. Idiot. Of course, this is always going to happen. And so now one of the guys I went with has been determined to be a close contact of someone who had COVID at the ground. And now because he had it and I went to the game with him, I still need to get in contact with our Department of Health and Human Services properly, but I may need to quarantine at home for 14 days as well. I actually had a COVID test yesterday, which came out this morning as being negative. I also am fully vaccinated, so it's unlikely it's going to affect me all that much, but it's not just about that. Obviously, it's about protecting the community. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking at least a 5-day prison sentence inside my own home, if not 2 weeks. And that's how I'm going to spend my 2 weeks holiday. Just as I, like, we got the bad news, we weren't coming to WA. That was shattering. We're trying to go, well, what else can we do? Do we fly to a different state and go somewhere, you know, sunny and warm, like in Queensland? Do we cancel our flights and rebook and, you know, what are we going to do? Do we even just stay in Victoria and drive around and do some, like a driving holiday?
Yeah.
And then, like, the moment we start to make any sort of plans... The world universe is just like, what the fuck do you think you're doing? Stay at home, you idiot. That's the only place you can be right now.
As that classic saying goes, you know, we make plans and COVID laughs. You know, like that is just absolutely what is happening. Well, the thing is, like, I had lost all hope that you were coming well before this had happened. I'm like, there's no way the universe or COVID, our leader at this point in time, will allow that to happen. So I pretty much like resigned myself to the fact that you weren't coming, even though we were getting so close.
I had hope.
Five days out from you coming here, I was like, there's no way. And then yesterday or the day before that, I was like, oh, maybe he will. And as soon as I said that to myself, I believe you sent me a message going, well, this doesn't look good. So I've learnt my lesson once again.
What's the saying? It's the hope that kills you.
It is hope that kills you.
I know Ted Lasso doesn't believe in that, but Taylor, go tell you, mate, it's the hope that kills you. It's like, this is the second time we've had to cancel this trip over because of fucking COVID. So this wasn't meant to be a confessional. Yeah. This is not where I was This is where it's happening though, guys. So thanks for listening to that. And I'm sure there are plenty of people who have got like a worse situation. I understand. Like
obviously. If
you get COVID, obviously this can be way worse than that. And people are being affected in all sorts of different ways. I'm lucky enough to be on holiday. You know, it's not going to affect my work immediately. Other people, their livelihoods are at stake when this stuff happens. And I get that. I totally do. But I think everyone's allowed to feel frustrated at the shitty situation in general. So with that in mind, I think it's worth saying right now, I was sort of thinking that probably next week we were likely to, or the week after, potentially, depends on what was happening with the trip, they would review the final episodes of The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
I still think that's probably the plan at this stage, but it's not going to be next week.
No.
It may not be the week after. We're going to take a little break.
We need a break.
A little mental health break. Just give ourselves, you know, time to figure out our existences.
Go back. We've got so many episodes now. Like, really, you guys have no excuse not to watch a season that you've been like, oh, maybe I should catch up on that they've reviewed. Go back. Watch one of those episodes that you haven't listened to us review yet. Watch it. Listen to that review. We've given you guys enough. We need a little break.
So, that's good. That's a good plan. Go back through the archives. See what you can find. Go, listen to a review. Listen to a bunch of different reviews of shows you might be interested in. See what we think. If you like it, start watching the show. Come back, listen to the rest. That's what it's there for. And so we'll be back in a few weeks, 2 or 3 weeks probably, to get back to The Sopranos and a bunch of other stuff. Oh, wow. What a great way to start the episode. In the meantime, let's get to our spoiler-free review of Loki Season 1.
Fuck, that's funny.
Let me clue you in.
Season in review.
Before I even do the facts and figures section, I just want to say, again, apologies, listeners, but I actually felt good to get off my chest a little bit, to vent a little bit.
Yeah.
I promise I will stay on topic for the rest of the podcast. It will not affect the rest of the podcast.
Look, we're nothing but professionals, bro, you and I.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Loki is a Disney Plus sci-fi fantasy mystery series based on the Marvel Comics character Loki, set in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the third such series after WandaVision and The Falcon and the Winter Soldier earlier in the year, and premiered on June 9th, 2021. Michael Waldron, writing assistant on Community, writer of Rick and Morty episode The Old Man and the Seat, and upcoming MCU film Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, and directed by Kate Herron, the series follows an alternate timeline version of Loki, who, after stealing the Tesseract during the events of Avengers Endgame, is brought to the mysterious Time Variance Authority, or TVA, a bureaucratic organization that exists outside of time and space to monitor the sacred timeline. Tom Hiddleston reprises his iconic performance as Loki from previous MCU films, joined by Owen Wilson, Gugu Mbatha-Raw, Wunmi Mosaku, Sofia DiMartino, and Tara Strong as the voice of Miss Minutes, not to mention a few others that are best left as surprises. Loki consists of 6 episodes, each coming in at around 49 minutes, including a long credit sequence that all these MCU TV shows seem to have, and took us approximately 4 hours and 55 minutes to watch. I've got to say also, Kate Herron, the director of the series, she has directed, notably going and doing some research, a few episodes of Sex Education, which was a show that we reviewed only 2 weeks ago. So there you go. It all ties in together.
Really enjoyed that, so not surprised. Yep.
Absolutely. So before we get to our spoiler-free review, Damask, I wanted you to remind the listeners for the umpteenth time your thoughts on Marvel, and specifically the first 2 Disney Plus MCU shows, WandaVision and The Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
All right, so I feel like I've had this conversation with you guys, you listeners at home, so many times. I feel like that drunk woman in the corner who keeps repeating herself, but I'll say it again. So I read a couple of the comics, mostly Civil War in terms of the MCU. I love the MCU, maybe minus perhaps the Ant-Man stuff. I can't get into it. I don't know why. Maybe MCU fatigue. I'm not sure. Anyway.
Have you tried Ant-Man and the Wasp yet?
Yeah. I couldn't finish it. I wasn't compelled. It's not that it was so bad, but I felt like I'd moved beyond caring about such sideline stuff. Anyway.
It's a shame the third one is probably going to be super important.
Oh, I'll definitely watch that. Like, before that comes out, I'll catch up. But cool. Yeah, no, I love the MCU. Captain America is my favorite character. Mm-hmm. I've been very invested. Particularly, I think, like, kind of slightly invested in MCU until, like, the first Avengers film came out. And then I was super fucking invested. And ever since then, yeah, just, like, rewatch. Every film that I possibly could. I fucking love it. Like, it's one of the things that I rarely go to the cinema now, mostly for financial reasons, but I'll always put aside money to make sure I'm getting, you know, those kind of midnight screening tickets for the big event movies for MCU. It's really important to me. I'm very attached to many of the characters. I love it. But to your other question about the Disney Plus shows, mm-hmm. WandaVision was such an encouraging moment. I think you and I, we dedicated a lot of time to the Marvel Netflix shows, many of which, most of which were very disappointing. Absolutely. I only liked the Jessica Jones, the first season of Jessica Jones. That was the only one I really connected with and enjoyed. So to have WandaVision come out and for them to prove that they absolutely can take that cinematic universe and bring it to TV, it was incredible. The performances were amazing. The ingenuity that they used in order to, like, craft their story was really impressive. So WandaVision honestly blew my mind as to how good it was. My expectations were high, and they exceeded them. With Falcon and Winter Soldier, I was lukewarm, I think, to that. That was more paint by numbers for me. I don't think they did anything particularly mind-blowing during that series. It was fine, and I'm excited to see, you know, Falcon. That's a spoiler. I'm excited to see the future of those characters, I'll say that. But as for that story that they told in that season particularly, I found it a little uninspiring, perhaps. But I was, after watching, you know, trailers for Loki, and after my experience with WandaVision, I was certainly excited for what Loki was going to do.
I'm in a very similar position. Big, big MCU fan. I have dabbled in the Marvel comics here and there, but I wouldn't say I'm an expert or enthusiast by any means. Have loved pretty much the vast majority of what the MCU has put out there, become very invested in that. Guardians of the Galaxy is probably my favorite one, but I've loved Captain America is my favorite of the characters, same as you. Big fan. Like you, was very disappointed by what Netflix did. Overall, there were some highlights here and there. Jessica Jones was the obvious one, but ultimately didn't seem to really fit the potential nor meet the standard the MCU was putting out there, which was disappointing. So these, especially after I think The Mandalorian showed that, like, Star Wars could succeed as a live action series on Disney Plus, when we got these MCU Disney Plus shows, that was encouraging. WandaVision in particular was always the one that grabbed my imagination, because I had enough understanding about some of the stuff they'd done in the comics with Wanda and Vision, that, and the just the idea of, like, using the TV language of sitcoms from the 50s onwards to make this story as a television show. It just seems so inspired and such a great way to use the production values that Disney comes with, that I was super looking forward to it. And for the most part, I was really, really, really into WandaVision. Towards the end, maybe not as encouraged or as into it, but for the vast majority of the runtime, certainly the work they had on the A-plot, really, really into it. Falcon the Winter Soldier, same as you, mostly paint by numbers, recognizable as just sort of that MCU action spy thriller type thing with some highlights in terms of the themes. It went to places thematically that I wasn't expecting them to go, at least in the sort of detail that they did. It didn't necessarily work as well on a plot level, but at least they were going for something. They were swinging for the fences in that thematic sense, at least from what we'd seen from the MCU. And so that was good, but certainly nowhere near as WandaVision. Loki, when first announced, I'll talk about this when I get to my spoiler-free review, actually. But yeah, I was looking forward to Loki by the time we were ready for that. I'm really glad, because originally it was planned that Falcon and the Winter Soldier would come out before WandaVision. I'm really glad that WandaVision came out first.
Yes.
Because I think if we started with Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I would have been far less encouraged by the whole thing. But WandaVision just really set a great tone. With all that in mind, Damask, could you please give us your spoiler-free review for Loki Season 1?
Absolutely. Once again, it feels like an honor and a privilege simply to be here, Brod, but to give my opinions. Oh, boy. What a lifetime highlight. Okay. Am I overcompensating for our mood? Maybe.
Slightly.
all right. Okay. So, talking about Loki. So, this show felt so momentous and important. Like we were talking about earlier, you know, Falcon in the Winter, and I'm talking about in context of the MCU, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Falcon and the Winter Soldier felt tangential to me. It felt like a placeholder, you know, kind of like while we waited for another movie to come out. I was like, okay, that's fine, but not really to the standard of what I expect from the MCU.
It was a bridge rather than an event.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah, well said. Absolutely. And WandaVision felt like an overdue dedication to characters who deserved more, and that was really appreciated. And the way that they did it, like you were saying, was so clever and so well done. It was like, fuck yeah. Loki felt like something else entirely. The story of this show felt somehow more important and consequential than any of the movies. And I fucking love a lot of the movies, but in terms of like what they're doing with the universe, this show feels huge and incredibly important. But obviously people have wanted more from Loki. He's a beloved character and I like the guy. I enjoy the energy he's always brought to the MCU, but I have in no way been obsessed. However, when I saw the trailers for this show, it excited me. And I won't go into details about the concept because I guess that's a spoiler in some way. So if people are going to this totally blind, I don't want to give anything away in terms of what they may or may not be doing. But I will say the concept that I was seeing just simply in those trailers looked like it had endless possibilities. And I was a keen bean, if you will. And oh, did I feel like a kid while I watched it. Much of this season was spent watching scenes of, I can't believe I'm saying this, but much of this season was spent watching scenes of two or maybe three people just having chats. They were just having chats, guys. And I loved it. I loved it. And it for two different, very different reasons. So the first being, you know, scenes of characters kind of psychoanalyzing one another, trying to determine motivations, and through those conversations, creating their own unique dynamic. And that wasn't really anything I'd seen in the MCU before. There's been plenty of great, you know, conversations, but a lot of the times it's not really about that. And this show really dedicates the time to it. And I think it's so valuable. Mm-hmm. I was, like I've said many times, about TV, I was rock hard for it. You know what I mean? Like real fucking rock hard for it.
Put on the poster.
Yeah. And the second type of conversation, going back to, you know, just scenes of two or three people having chats, the second type of conversation between two people or three people were the ones in which the result of this conversation has such epic repercussions for not only those in the room, but the whole goddamn universe. I was, not only was I rock hard, I was also at that point jizzing in my pants. Like it was.
Actively touching yourself.
Yes. Actively touching myself going, please give me more. But also, is this too much? It was amazing. So this show moves away from grand battles, you know, with space lasers or like big bad monsters, and instead focuses on character connections and moral dilemmas. Oh boy, I fucking loved. I loved that part of it. It was both quiet and big, It was momentous, but not in the obvious ways. So I really
Can I give my interpretation of that?
Yeah.
It was simultaneously focused on the smaller story and yet epic.
Yes.
Like
yes,
it was both absolutely. Those things at once. Yep. Yeah.
Yes. Sorry, I've totally lost my space of where I am at because I'm so excited. So, yeah, no, it's fine. All right. So not only all of that, this show has such a sense of adventure. It reminded me of some of my favorite seasons of Doctor Who. You know, we've got our thrills, we've got our companions and whole new worlds and possibilities to explore. I mean, I really can't help but fangirl over my experience of this show. Watching this week to week was such a joy. Every time an episode finished, I was both ecstatic at what I had seen and furious that I had to wait 7 days for more. And this is coming from someone who is experiencing, you know, their biggest spell of depression in maybe like 3 to 4 years, probably 4 years. Like, I'm horribly depressed right now. And this show gave me this much joy. I was so, so, so happy to watch it. I fucking loved it. Loved it so much. All right, Brod, over to you.
Okay.
Oh,
let's,
no.
Let's bring it down a little bit, shall we?
Don't ever bring it down, Brod.
When Loki was first announced, it was easily my least anticipated MCU show. The conceit of WandaVision, as we talked about earlier, instantly sold me. Understanding how Avengers Endgame left Sam Wilson and Bucky Barnes, it wasn't hard to imagine where a show focused on them would go. Loki, on the other hand, was a complete unknown. Sure, Loki made that grand escape in Endgame, but there was no obvious storyline for what a Loki show would be, especially since this was going to follow an alternate timeline version of the character and not the one we'd come to know through the Thor series of films. Then two things happened. Number one, WandaVision was excellent and proved that the MCU shows couldn't just work. They could be very different from the films that came before them. And two, the teaser trailer for Loki arrived with an energy that instantly hooked me. Just like that, Loki became the real proving ground. Marvel managed to play outside the box once with WandaVision, but could it do it repeatedly? And if so, could it do it well? The answer is a glorious yes.
Yes!
I also fucking love this show. It just hits me in all the right places in all the right ways.
Oh, boy. This does,
there's a lot of sensuality to what we're talking about, I should say.
Are we turning each other on? What's going on?
Or eroticism, maybe, if not sensual. On the most surfacey of surface levels, the production design in Loki is just impeccable. Sure, Disney have all the money in the world, so it shouldn't be surprising that their stuff looks and sounds good. But that talent and the work that money buys needs to be recognized. Everything about this show looks amazing. The sets, the props, the lighting, the digital backdrops, the camera movements, visual effects, all of it is of movie quality and comes together to stand apart from anything else in the MCU. The TVA,
there's plenty of people out there with billions of dollars not doing such great
things.
That
don't know how to
use it. Okay, go into fucking space.
Sure, perfect example.
These people are making life on Earth a little bit better, for me at least.
The TVA headquarters in particular is a place that I just want to spend a week lost in. It's not uncommon to see a retro-futuristic design in pop culture, but it's never been better realized, I don't think, nor made more sense to see a CRT monitor with a monochromatic graphics coupled with a hyper-advanced cosmic monitoring system that a reality-governing bureaucracy that exists outside of time itself. It's just, it's fun, it's absurd, and it works. Just as strong is Natalie Holt's weird, warped, and wonderful score. Equal parts cool and unsettling. It creates an incredible mood that enhances everything that's happening on screen and carries us through each episode and into the credits feeling oh so many things.
The music is so good. I've got to agree with that. It's so good in
like,
the series.
Up there, if it's right there with Ludwig Göransson's Black Panther score in terms of like the best music in any of the shows. And WandaVision had some highlights here and there, but it and good use of theme and stuff like that. But Loki has been on another level, I think.
Mm-hmm.
At the time of recording, music for the first 3 episodes of Loki are on Spotify with the rest to follow. And what is already there, I've been listening to on repeat. At this point, you may be thinking, well, this sounds like a super fun sci-fi adventure romp of a show, and you'd be right, but it is also extremely character-focused. Of course, there is a mind-bending mystery to solve with multiple timelines and planets to visit. How Doctor Who does that sound? But it never forgets to be about the characters first. Tom Hiddleston's Loki has always been a fan favorite for a while now, but somehow, and in incredibly quick fashion, they made me really care about a completely different version of Loki than one we knew. Furthermore, only after one episode, I would have protected Owen Wilson's Mobius with my life. Wilson is not the sort of actor I would naturally pick to join the MCU, but he's inspired casting, fully committed to his role, with an infectious chemistry with Tom Hiddleston that sparkles on screen.
I just want to jump in there.
Please do.
Owen Wilson is that kind of actor, and we spoke about in the last episode, which was an off-topic, hot topic, about A League of Their Own, the series they're making about that. And they recently cast Nick Offerman kind of as that Tom Hanks character. And I was talking about Nick Offerman being that kind of actor who, while playing someone who's terrible, much as Tom Hanks did, is so likable. That's the kind of person you need to hire. And Owen Wilson, for me, is one of those actors. You can put him in any role, but just simply by his natural charm and talent, no matter what, there's a part of me that is just so affectionate towards him, and he brings that in full force to the character of Mobius.
I think he just also has a slightly, like, well, there's been a lot of very good actors who have obviously been in the MCU and very charming actors, you think of Paul Rudd and stuff like that, but Owen Wilson has this laconic, is that the right word? Like, this relaxed attitude that isn't normally something you'd see.
Mm-hmm.
But by being here and then coupled with the intensity of Tom Hiddleston's, you know, glorious, prideful Loki is just such a perfect choice. And it's just that little bit different from what we normally get that, like, I was instantly excited. I remember there's a scene in the teaser sequence, just Loki and Mobius talking in an elevator in episode one. And just being like, oh, okay, I need to pay attention to this because this just feels like it's going to be really something cool.
Yeah.
From top to bottom, the key performers are all excellent, bolstered by a witty, sentimental, and extremely smart script. And I want to emphasize the smart part of that. Sometimes shows and movies write characters to be geniuses. I think of something like Sherlock, for instance, and the Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr. But often, that just means they know things other characters couldn't, or they say a bunch of sci-fi sounding techno jargon that's meant to make them seem impressive. Loki is full of actually clever characters who play their hands with intelligence and make properly smart choices. This is likely because the writers themselves are actually smart, nimbly, and sometimes cheekily avoiding narrative traps that lesser stories would step into.
Yeah, it's about like active problem solving as opposed to passive problem solving. So if you have someone who's a genius and automatically the smartest person in the room, it feels like passive problem solving because they're always going to get the solution. But we're able to watch these characters through, you know, character motivation, figure out the best solution for them in every situation, which is great.
I think what the show does well is feels like all those moments are really, really, really well earned.
Mm-hmm.
Like you see the cogs turning or you see the problem evolving and you see the character make those choices and you understand why they made the choice they made at every possible turn. Mm-hmm. And that does not always happen. Sometimes the good guy just knows the good guy thing to do. Sometimes the bad guy just knows the bad guy thing to do. And you're left going, but why did they do that? Or how did they know that? And this is not that show whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
If it sounds like I'm gushing, it's because I am. There's very little I didn't enjoy about Loki. Though that's not to say it doesn't hit a snag here or there. Occasionally, execution doesn't quite meet ambition, with a cute but largely clunky single-shot long-take sequence being the most notable example. Similarly, a few action scenes do feel a little pedestrian compared to what you might see in other parts of the MCU, but honestly, the fights were never the bit I cared about.
Mm.
They function when they need to, especially when building towards emotionally motivated character moments, and that's what really matters in the end. I've only watched it through once so far, following along week by week as it released on Disney Plus, which is still proving to be an excellent move on their part, I must say. But Loki is quite honestly one of the best things the MCU has ever done. Yes, I know I said that about WandaVision, But this goes another step further, if for no other reason than it properly sticks the finale. Mm-hmm. When Avengers Endgame arrived and Phase 3 finally finished, I had to wonder if the MCU really could continue its run of quality, especially as expanded from the cinema and into our homes. If WandaVision wasn't proof enough, Loki certainly is. Marvel Studios is going to be just fine. Damask, how would you score Loki Season 1 out of 5 stars?
Can you give your rating first? Because I'm umming and ahhing between two different scores. And
it's probably the same as me.
I like to hear your opinion so I can be like, do I agree with that or do I not agree with that?
The hardest thing for me to do is like hit that 5. I've been really reluctant to give it away recently. Mm. I've set that bar really high at this idea of masterful. Mm-hmm. And like I've always said, 5s don't need to be perfect, though. And I don't think Loki is perfect.
No.
But I so appreciate how good so much of it is. Mm-hmm. And the quality that so many parts of this show hit. And that the quibbles I have are so minor compared to how much I enjoyed it.
All right, I've got my score.
I've gone back and forth multiple times. And I've once again flipped back to a 5.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's 5 stars.
Yeah, I was doing 4.5 or a 5.
That's me too.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 5. I really, like, this was such a good time and so well made. Like, yeah, yep, I'm going to give it a 5. Yeah.
I want to say as well, I loved WandaVision, but I can only give it a 4 out of 5 for a few key reasons. Firstly, the final episode half delivered, but half of it was a drag. And secondly, its C plot wasn't always well executed. And more importantly, wasn't always well integrated into the rest of the show. Loki doesn't have either of those issues. Mm-hmm. So where it's WandaVision's execution on a number of production levels, what could meet Loki at times, those two key factors, those two key weaknesses that affected my overall thoughts on WandaVision just do not exist for Loki.
Yeah.
They just don't. And so I'm going to give it 5 stars.
Cool.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's that time again where we beg and plead at your feet for you all to review us on Apple Podcasts. You enjoy our content for free. It's the least you can do. Nothing helps the show to grow more than by throwing 5 stars and a rant, please, a giant paragraph, anyone, about how much you love us on Apple Podcasts.
Oh, I love there. Sometimes it's begging and sometimes it's outright demanding. I'm not sure we've quite found the sweet spot in between yet.
We'll find it.
But we'll make this easier for you. If we reach 25 written reviews on Apple Podcasts, we will finally review Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1. I want to get there. I'm fascinated to see us return to that and really talk about that in a critical fashion, because a lot's changed in, you know, 20-something years since that show came out.
It certainly has. I think when we first started, like, saying this to people, I had an idea of what I was going to say, and now I have no idea, so it should be interesting. We would also love you to share Hunting Seasons with friends, family, people you pass on the street, whoever you want, if you think they might also enjoy listening.
Next week and probably the week after, we're going to have a break. I think we've earned a little bit of a holiday. But when we return, we'll be reviewing The Sopranos Season 6 Part 2. If you'd like to contribute to our final discussion of The Sopranos, because let's be honest, something could come up. Something amazing could drop all of a sudden. Stranger Things Season 4 hits. We're going to review that first, you know, mm-hmm. something like that. Or if you have any thoughts on Loki, you can write to us or send us an audio recording that we may include on a future episode to contact@huntingseasonspodcast.com or find us on Twitter @HuntingSCast. But right now, let's talk spoilers for Loki Season 1.
You're now entering the spoiler zone.
Spoiler warning. From here on, we'll be discussing everything that happens in Season 1 of Loki. And let's be honest, possibly parts of other MCU stuff up through Phase 3 into Phase 4, including WandaVision. Probably not Falcon the Winter Soldier, but who knows. Before listening any further, we recommend watching all of Loki and the MCU in general up to this point. If you've not yet done so, proceed with caution. There are spoilers ahead. You have been warned.
Deep dive.
It's cool to know other people think about this stuff too.
I want to start with something that I've avoided talking about specifically because I feel like it is a spoiler to have mentioned it earlier, even though we not often talk about this otherwise.
Okay.
We are getting a second season of Loki.
Yes, we are.
So normally I'd put that in the facts and figures section, but the thing is there was not necessarily an expectation we would get a season 2. WandaVision,
not at all.
No indication we're getting a second season of that. Falcon the Winter Soldier, maybe down the line, but again, no indication of that happening.
Could be a film, could be a show, we don't know yet. Yeah.
Exactly. The mid-credit sequence, the final thing we see of anything inside the show is that Loki will be back for a season 2.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that's extremely exciting because I can't wait to have more of this. And as the season was wrapping up, I was like, there's no fucking way they can end it like this.
Mm-hmm.
If they did, I probably wouldn't have been as hot on the finale, but knowing we're getting a season 2, that we're going to get heaps more time with these characters.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get more Loki. We're going to get more Sylvie. We're going to get more Mobius. Oh, that was a nice little button to end things on.
I was reading, I can't remember where I was reading it, but that it was meant to be a much longer season, and obviously COVID meant that they cut it in half, and so that's why we're getting a season 2.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. There's a couple of shots in the trailers that didn't make it into the show. And I kind of wonder if somewhere along the way they changed their plans slightly for how this is going to work. Specifically, the person that shows up in the last episode may not have initially been who it is we ended up getting.
Mm-hmm.
Or that, that it was going to play differently and they either realized what they had on their hands or they decided to move it into the rest of the MCU in a different way and that changed things too. But fuck, the idea of this being a season 2, this is a real TV show now. It's not just like an extended movie. And I think WandaVision is a really good television show, but Falcon and the Winter Soldier easily could have been a movie. Like that.
Yeah.
And you could even argue that Loki season 1 condensed well enough could have functioned as a movie, but no longer. Now it has to be a TV show, and that's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw that, obviously when it ended, I was like, well, it can't end here, so we need a season 2. And then Angela and I were talking during the credits, and I was like, shh, hush, there's something coming. I know there is.
Always.
Always. And, yeah, when it said, you know, season 2, Loki will return season 2, I was giddy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I like fist pumped. Yes.
Yeah, I was like, fuck, yes, that's what I want. Thank you so much. Yes.
Before we get into some character stuff, I wanted to talk about a few things that I thought were interesting about this show in comparison to others. First of all, I just wanted to talk about the mystery aspect of this show because it is a big mystery. Like, we set this up. First, we're just figuring out what the TVA is. Then we're trying to figure out who this variant that they're chasing is that's, you know, stealing all these reset charges. Then we're trying to figure out exactly who Sylvie is. Then we're trying to figure out what the real deal with the TVA is because apparently everything they've been told is a lie. Then we're trying to figure out what the void is at the end of it. And then we're trying to figure out who's inside the castle and what it all means. It's like this ongoing series of mysteries. But unlike something like WandaVision, where the mystery is just, this is weird. What the fuck's going on? We're not going to tell you until right at the very end. It always felt like every episode was giving me a meaningful, like, step along the way. In fact, the immediate mystery I had was often answered, and then a new mystery was set up. So the best example of that being when they introduced, we didn't know who the variant was going to be, the hooded figure in episode 1, and then by episode 2, we knew it was a Loki.
Yeah.
And like I was like, I didn't expect that to be the case so quickly. I expected that to be something that was pushed way down the road. It was going to be a mystery right up until episode 5 or something like that. Instead, it was like, bam, here we go.
Yeah.
The same with like the timekeepers. I had a feeling even from episode 2, there was probably a bit of a Wizard of Oz situation going on here. There was really someone else behind the curtain. But I didn't necessarily expect episode 4 to finish by going, these guys aren't real. This was all a lie. Like, I love that momentum of how they gave us so much with the mystery.
Momentum is absolutely the word that was in my notes. I literally have the notes, you know, we've got mystery reveal, mystery reveal, mystery reveal.
Yeah.
And I wrote this, that aspect of it gave this show real momentum. Mm-hmm. Like, and don't get me wrong, like, I loved what WandaVision was doing in terms of, like, what is going on? Like, what are we piecing together to kind of get the reveal that we do in the end? But it's also really fun and satisfying to watch a show that gives you a really compelling mystery and is not afraid to solve it continuously. It shows me they have so much story to tell. They're not attaching themselves to one idea. It's like, well, this is a big part of it, but then you and the characters can have this information because there is so much more to mine in this world, because they've opened up a whole nother universe or multiverses of possibilities. And so they're not hindered really at this point by anything. And it makes it such an exciting ride.
The other thing I wanted to talk about was talking about like how smart the show is. And a couple of examples I want to give of that. And both of them come from episode 4, which had a bunch of this going on, was how characters were sort of interacting and playing moments throughout. And I think one of the best examples of that, of the show really doing a good job of this, was early on episode 4, they get Loki and Sylvie, the TVA capture them, and they take Loki back to that room that Mobius was interrogating him in episode 1, and they put him in that time loop thing, right? And it's essentially torture. It's like water torture or something like that. It's just repeating the same thing over and over and over again, this like super low moment in Loki's life. It's been a defining moment in his life. Mm. And he comes out of the torture, and was essentially torture, this time loop, and it hasn't worked, right? It wasn't a thing that convinced him to work with Mobius. He doesn't give Mobius better information, anything like that. It's the way that Mobius then manipulates him and his emotions in the conversation that follows really, really smartly that he finally gets the information that he wants out of Loki. And it's like watching that happen, it was never easy, but it was beautifully character motivated. And you saw it sort of orchestrated in that scene. I was like, this is extremely good writing. And I believe everyone's motivations, everyone's methodology in this scene. In a completely different way, it's actually the start of episode 5. There was a sequence when after Loki had, but Mobius and Loki had both been pruned, which was a fucking shock.
Yeah.
And then Sylvie's left behind with Gugu Mbatha's character, Ravana. I can never remember her name.
Me either. Yeah.
The judge lady.
Yeah.
And there was this thing happening where they were talking about where they'd gone to the void, how we're going to get there. And all of a sudden, the judge character is talking about this spaceship they've got that's meant to go to the void and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting here just like rolling my eyes going, oh no, they've done like the laziest thing that a lot of stories do, where they find this really convenient thing that no one's talked about before to get to the place that we need them to go. This really sucks. I was just like, oh, this is the first moment I've like been really disappointed in the writing. And then it turns out that was all a fucking lie and was a manipulation just to get Sylvie to not do anything for a while backup showed up. And what I loved about that was they weren't only playing Sylvie, they were playing me, the person who watches this stuff and pays too much attention to it and hates that trope, and used it against me and weaponized it against me to make me to be manipulated as well. And I thought that was so cool that they knew what narrative trap to not fall into.
And it gives me great privilege to say, I was not played. I was not played for a goddamn second. I thought it was quite obvious what was going on, but I enjoyed to see that you're easily manipulated by Miss Minutes. That's good to know. Good to know. All
right. Yes, absolutely. But I think it was just because it was playing into a trope that I feel like other MCU things have done.
And so many shows like it do so often. You know, with sci-fi and fantasy, or particularly sci-fi, do that all the fucking time. It's like, oh, well, we actually have this device.
Yeah.
It's only a prototype, but let's try and use that to solve the problem.
Especially that.
Yeah, it's so often the thing. So I can understand why suddenly your brain would go into no mode.
It's just a prototype. It's never been tested. it might not work, but yeah. Of course it's going to work because we need the story to continue. I was like, fuck you. I can't believe you're doing that. And they didn't. So applause. What would you like to talk about?
One thing that I thought was so important for them to do, and I think the way they did it was wonderful, as well as the performance that is given in that moment, is so obviously the Loki that we have in this show is not the Loki that we come to know in something like, is it Endgame? Is that the last time we've seen
Even Endgame. No, the last time was Infinity War. He died at the start of Infinity War, yeah.
Infinity War. So, like, that's kind of the last time that we see the Loki that we've come to know. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really important that Loki has some context as to both our affection and a moment of context for him to reflect on who he is as a person. And so to have him have access to his memories as well as, I guess, I don't know if memories is the right word, but memories of the future, to see his entire life play out before his own eyes and have those emotional realizations, even though from a different point, but have those at least – some of those emotional realizations made this mean so much more, that he had seen what had happened while not personally experiencing it, had seen these different versions of himself. I thought it was so fucking important to make this story have any kind of real meaning to it.
Yeah, the biggest problem they had was starting with the fact that this was the Loki.
This is old Loki. Yeah.
This is Loki who'd only just been defeated at the end of Avengers. Like, he's basically at the height of his villainy here.
Asshole.
He's most pompous, he's most, like, proud, all of those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
What's great about that first episode is that he's still, like, it's not like when that episode's over, he's the same Loki we had by Infinity War. Exactly.
No, not at all.
But he was, you know, some of the way there. It just did a great job. In fact, that whole first episode does, of just taking this guy and then minute by minute by minute breaking him down. So, you know, he talks about his glorious purpose and what he's, you know, he's meant to be a ruler and all this sort of stuff. And then he's told that his entire purpose, as according to the timekeepers, is just to be a shithead who motivate the Avengers to become good enough to defeat Thanos. And that by the time he dies, he essentially gets fridged in Endgame. Sorry, in Infinity War. Like, that's the end of his purpose. He never had anything beyond that. He was always a pawn to make other people grander and have success. Yeah. And just, like, watching that breakdown. And then when he finds that drawer full of Infinity Stones and,
oh,
like,
my God, yeah.
Like, that, the this thing that he considered to be, like, an ultimate power, or that he understood to be so powerful, reduced to literal paperweights, is,
and,
like,
it also does that for the audience as well, which is so great. Like, when that guy says, you know, the guy from The Good Place, says, you know, like, oh, a lot of the guys use them as paperweights. Like, all of our context for the world they've created, the universe they've created, says to us, these are things that are incredibly hard to get. To have them all in one place is almost impossible. And to wield them, you must be the most powerful being in the universe. And to then re-reference that in a context of these people use them as paperweights. For Loki, it was like, whoa. And for me as an audience member, I was like, oh, fuck. Like, where are we now? That's what I was saying in my spoiler-free review. It makes this show more important.
Yeah, momentous
than anything we've seen before, which I did not expect.
So I saw some criticisms from people after watching episode one particularly that there's a few things about this show that they felt sort of undermined what had come before, the first three phases of the MCU. Number one, the Infinity Stones now being, you know, essentially a joke,
mm-hmm.
made everything that came before it and how much importance was placed upon them, sort of now that's lesser, like it undoes something from those original films.
So hard to disagree.
But also one of the things they also talk about extensively in this series is how no one really has free will in this this scenario, because everyone is being guided down this path that leads to the same result over and over and over again. The moment that something varies off the path, that timeline is pruned. And so, in a sense, you might argue that Captain America and Thor and Iron Man and all those characters were always going to do the things they do and that none of their choices really mattered. So that adventure we went on with them, witnessing that story over the last 10, 12 years or whatever, sort of feels less meaningful now that you know that events were always just going to play out that way. Did you feel that way at all?
Not at all. I mean, my love of the MCU has always been entirely character focused. So to bring this into, like, I don't know, reality or whatever, if I found out that we were in this predestined reality and all of my choices were already laid out before me, and it turns out I didn't, you know, have all the free will that I thought I had, that doesn't invalidate all of the emotions or connections or the value in the life that I live. And I feel that same way about the characters. Those characters and those relationships are still so important to me. It doesn't matter about the machinations behind the scenes. You know, their lives, the characters' lives are important. They are living all they know, and that doesn't have value just because there's something bigger out there at all. They still hold as much value to me.
If I was going to get meta for a second, it's like being told, well, that movie you just watched, guess what? That was scripted. Someone wrote that. That guy, Captain America, not real, didn't really make those choices. It's like, duh. The point
still
is
evokes
the story.
The same.
Exactly. Yeah, it's you've often talked about this, like you like being manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
That's all these things ever are. They're a manipulation. This function of these stories should be to draw us into the world and the story, make us care about the characters, and then hopefully have a satisfying sort of conclusion or arc to them, to come away feeling like I got something from that, or this was successful in evoking this theme or idea or whatever it is, a whole bunch of different things. And, like, the fact that it was written that these, like, and even in the context of the MCU, I just don't think it invalidates any of that stuff. And for me, what the show was doing and what successfully did was just make me go, well, holy fuck, all of a sudden, it was a question of who could be more dangerous than Thanos? How could something be bigger than Thanos? And how can you effectively convey that? This did it in a comical moment in episode one of this television show and just made you go, whatever happens after this is a whole lot bigger than what came before. Yeah. And that's pretty impressive, I think.
Because I believe in this idea of a multiverse. So every decision that each one of us makes branches off into another kind of existence. So I feel like there are, you know, endless amounts of damasks and broads and all of that. That doesn't mean that my timeline is invalidated by the existence of that. And so, well, yes, this is one timeline that this greater being has decided is the one true one that's right for most people. I feel like those choices are still being made. It's just whenever that other choice is made, that's curbed. So it's just like, yeah, it doesn't invalidate it to me in any way.
How do you feel about the use of Loki throughout the rest of the season? His sort of storyline or arc? What worked for you? What was compelling for you? What was your sort of feelings on Tom Hiddleston's Loki in general?
I mean, it is just a very compelling character. I mean, one of my favorite characters, which is rarely done well, and this isn't exactly that, but it's usually in teen dramas where it's like the high school bitch with the heart of gold.
Sure.
I love that character. And Loki,
Cordelia.
Cordelia. That kind of character really wins me over very easily. And it usually is from a place of this desperate need to be loved, but also have control in every situation, to control that love in whatever way they can. And so to have a character like Loki who really, and Tom, what's his name?
Hiddleston.
Thank you. I was going to say Middleston. That's not right. Tom Hiddleston's portrayal of this almost like lost boy. Like he's, there's something really boyish about him. Something almost emotionally naive about him is very compelling. And I enjoyed his discovery of his own emotions and his own, and kind of the discovery of empathy and, you know, the importance of others over the self. It's a beautiful story and it's performed so wonderfully. I was engaged every step of the way.
So I wouldn't necessarily compare this to like the bitch with a heart of gold in high school. The immediate comparison is something that shows up in lots of different stories, including some of my absolute favorites, which is the bad boy or the bad guy who becomes a good guy along the way.
It's the same thing for me.
So not to spoil, I don't want to spoil too many things here. I'm going to say Buffy is on the table here. It's been out for long enough. Spike, for instance, is a great example of a character who does that well. Avatar The Last Airbender has a character who does that better than any other story I can think of on the planet.
Yeah.
And there's always something compelling about that. But in this instance, it's just so much fun. Yeah, as we said, he gets torn down bit by bit in the first episode. He has to confront and deal with why he behaves the way that he did. He has to try and figure out what it means, who he is.
Emotional this constant reckoning. Idea. Oh, it's so good.
Emotional reckoning, but like it's like a story of discovery or rediscovery of self. So like by nature of being around all these other Loki variants, he learns sort of what it means to be a Loki. What is sort of the essence of himself and of Loki's, which is fascinating. But what I love is the literal learning to love thyself.
Yes.
And like what's the RuPaul line? If you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love anybody else? Can I get an amen? It's like,
amen.
That is the story of Loki, right? And there's a lot of differing opinions on like the Loki Sylvie love story. But fuck, like, okay, I want to get your opinion on this. Do you feel weird at all about, how do you feel about like, this two Lokis falling in love that happened in this season?
I'm into it. I am into it.
It doesn't weird you out at all? It doesn't make you feel like incestual or anything like that?
Not in the slightest. It does not in the slightest make you feel weird. Does it make you feel weird?
Not at all. And the people who do feel weird about it, I think, I don't know. I think they're projecting something that they shouldn't onto it. Maybe guilty feelings for having seen their sister naked in the shower or something like that. I don't know what it is. But, you know,
neither of us have sisters. Maybe that's why we're comfortable possibly. With it. I
have a half-sister, but we never lived together, so that didn't happen. But the point being, it's like, it's not the same thing as incest. And who the fuck cares? It's this weird-ass situation
in
that is totally improbable.
World where this is a possibility, all the rules are out the window. We're not talking about that anymore. This is not a Game of Thrones Lannister thing.
No.
You were all pretty comfortable with that, may I say, by the way.
But
this weirds you out. Oh, no, I was fully into it. No, I wasn't. But you know what I mean? Like, people accepted that pretty much. They're like, okay, these two, because it's ye old times, I guess brother and sister are fucking. But these are like, we're in a world in which you have endless versions of yourself, one of which can be a fucking alligator, and you meet someone who can connect with you in a way that you have always wanted to be connected with, and you find them attractive. They don't look anything like you. You find them attractive and you want to go to the bone zone. And I'm not a hater and I fully encourage it.
I will say, if he had fallen in love with the alligator, that wouldn't have been as cool.
Bestiality. Oh, no, I'd read that fan fiction. I'm not opposed to anything.
But I think the important differential here is that this is not a scenario that can happen in real life. They aren't brother and sister. That's not what they are. They aren't genetically related like that. This isn't a completely fantastical, impossible scenario. Let's just let it ride. It's too interesting to not
just enjoy the ride, and go. Man. Just enjoy and go, it.
I want to see what this is, because we can never explore. It's not something we can consider in real life, so let it happen. Anyway, point being, the metaphor come to life of that, of Loki having to learn to love himself, and finally by loving himself, maybe he can love other people. Brilliant.
So good.
By having to learn. But how about this idea that a Loki can never be trusted? Like, Sylvie's big thing is she can't trust. Loki's problem is that no one can trust him. And like that, learning to overcome these huge character flaws. Did you feel let down at all by the ending of this season? Did you feel like they were heading towards something and they sort of didn't get to finish their arcs? Or what were your thoughts on how the show ended?
No, I didn't. I thought it was a beautiful place to end it, which allows for so much more growth in season two. So, yeah, Loki comes to this kind of proclamation of, like, I can never be trusted, though I don't think that's true at all. I think we've seen, you know, quite a few times that he can be trusted. But the fact that she can't trust, and that stops her from being able to take a moment and breathe with someone else and evaluate a situation, I think is quite tragic. So it didn't let me down, because I know that there's a season two. I'm excited to see. So that, you know, we've spoken about what they both think they are. So I'm excited for the exploration for both of those characters to who they really are, as opposed to just a projection they have of themselves.
I want to talk a lot about Sylvie now. First of all, because I didn't mention her because it's kind of a spoiler as to who she is. I didn't want to put too much emphasis on it. Sophia DiMartino is really great in this show. I'll be honest, my first impression of her in episode two was not necessarily that I really loved her. I wasn't quite sure how I felt about her sort of take on Loki, whether it was too dissimilar, too removed, or like whether, like, is she trying to do an impression that's not really coming across? I wasn't really sure. By the time I just got to spend more time with her, and episode three is dedicated to just Loki and Sylvie being together, basically, all of that washed away. And I was as invested in her character as I was in Tom Hiddleston's Loki, 100%. Yeah. And it was so easy to do as well. Her story is ridiculously compelling in terms of this variant, the one who got away and has been on the run ever since, and doesn't even know, does not even understand what it was about her existence that made her, that made them choose to prune her.
Yeah.
I think is extremely upsetting and a really motivating, incredibly easy to sympathize with her position and why she so motivated, not just to find out or understand that, but more importantly, to take down the people who ruined her existence like this.
Yeah.
When the Ravana or the judge, I can't remember her name again, sorry, says she doesn't even remember what her crime was, it's like such a gut punch, such a slap in the face to this woman's existence.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, they obviously do have similarities and, you know, common stuff as well. I'm talking about Loki and Sylvie. But I think, like, it's really important to remember, and is acknowledged in the final episode, of, like, she's been on the run since before he was born. Like, her circumstances have absolutely molded her, and they are not, by any stretch of the imagination, the same person. You know, this version of Loki was extracted from her life as a child and has been alone ever since and in a constant mode of survival. She has not had the luxury of, you know, playing, you know, pranks on Lady Sif and all that stuff. Like, they are very, very, and I think almost entirely different people. And I think I was nervous about a female Loki coming on the scene. I was like, please don't do an impersonation.
Yeah.
Please don't just be this, you know, other version of But they didn't do that at all. Sylvie is her own character.
100%.
And I really connected with that character that she was.
It was interesting as well what they've done with Sylvie is they've sort of meshed a few different things from the comics into one, I think, really, really smart version of this character that can exist in the MCU really well. So the obvious things are Loki has just been a woman at times in the MCU. He's sort of flipped back and forth. I think some people really connect with Loki as being a transgender character to some degree in the MCU because of that. Also love, like, it seems like too little too late sometimes, but it's nice to have a main, extremely popular part of the MCU be officially queer as well. This proclamation that they're, well, not proclamation, but this, you know, knowledge that they're bi, but that Loki's bi, at least bisexual, I think is great. But then they've also put together the Enchantress, who is sort of a very Loki-ish type of character anyway, mixed with Sylvie, who's another version of Enchantress, who is a girl that was given the powers of Loki by Loki. And rather than make it too confusing, have gone, we want to have these Loki variants. Let's just put all of that into one character and make it fit. And it's really, really smart choice. And this is where MCU has really continued to impress me, actually, is how they choose, what bits they choose and how they make it work within their ongoing universe. And don't necessarily simplify it. They just make it fit in with this version of the stories they're telling. It's really quite impressive, actually. So then we get up to the ultimate part at the end of the episode where He Who Remains gives them this choice to either kill him and bring chaos upon the multiverse or to take his place and work together happily ever after, theoretically, to keep the sacred timeline going and shape it in whatever way they would like to. And Sylvie is not willing to listen to He Who Remains nor Loki at this moment. And this is one tiny criticism that I do agree with that someone suggested. In fact, this is a quote from Film Critic Hulk's Patreon post about the series finale. He's been really critical of the MCU TV show up to this point, and I understand with a lot of what he's saying. He was relatively actually pretty hot on Loki for a number of reasons. One thing he put forward is, this is a quote, "She's just straight up not listening to this guy, and I think this is the one moment that actually gets mishandled on the surface level because you have to have her utter rage come out in order for the irrationality to play. It has to be all about that life that's been stolen. More importantly, you also have to have Time Dad, aka He Who Remains, actually answering why she was taken. It sort of doesn't get into it in this part to further that rage. Yes, I know her motivations. I understand the logic of it, but I want to better feel it in that moment." I kind of agree with that.
I don't disagree, yeah.
Because I think Jonathan Majors, who we really enjoyed, we thought he was really good in the now-cancelled Lovecraft Country, although he's also been Emmy-nominated this week as well. So big week for him. Such a beautiful man. He was brilliant in this episode.
He was so good. He was so creepy. Yeah. Anyway, go on. Sorry.
I want to come back to him in a second. But it felt like the show really did a little bit, just a little bit, took the focus off Loki and Sylvie for a long stretch there and put it all on what He Who Remains was saying, to the point where they kind of didn't get to that moment that really got to understand how Sylvie wasn't at least willing to listen or consider this moment. I think what Film Critic Hulk is saying is, like, if she just asks a question, but can you just tell me why you pruned me? Explain to me why that was a good decision. And I know he says it wasn't personal, it was practical, but all he had to say was, you were a girl, which might simply have been it. Loki couldn't be a girl. Loki had to be a boy, whatever it was. Something so ridiculous that it just made her go, fuck you. That's all it would have taken. And you would have been emotionally 100% on board with that decision, as well as, like, rationally on board.
And you could totally have both. Like, let's not pretend as though, like, these episodes, the time length don't wildly vary. They could have, because I loved every moment we had with He Who Remains.
I wouldn't want to cut any of that. Totally.
But I don't disagree that I think they really give Loki his, you know, reasonings and all of that stuff. And you really feel compassionate towards like what he's trying to do. And it's very noble and it's beautiful to see. But I do agree that Sylvie came across as irrational without an explanation as to why she's irrational, without obviously our basic understanding of
like you can like, put it together. I just yeah. in the moment,
but to have a compelling moment that yes. hits you emotionally, I think that's a valid criticism. Yeah,
because if you had that moment, you would have felt it too. It yes. reminds me actually the best example I give, and this is MCU spoilers, is like when at the end of Civil War, Tony Stark finds out that Bucky killed his parents. Mm. It's like rationally you understand that Bucky was under mind control and didn't have a choice, mm-hmm. but emotionally you understand why Tony is going to kill him right there.
As soon as like, Tony says he killed my mum,
yeah.
you're like, well, yeah, everything's yeah. off the table. He killed your mum. So, yeah, you're going to fucking kill him. Yeah, no one can. Yeah,
you can't. You accept that yes. is going
to
happen.
Yeah. Well, he's going to have to do what he's going to have to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so that's what that scene was missing, I think. Just a mm-hmm. little bit. Just a yep. little bit. Let's talk about He Who Remains. He Must Not Be Named. Jonathan Majors. Now, I keep using that term, He Who Remains, because that's the term he calls himself with. Brilliant introduction to this character.
Mm.
Jonathan Majors, it reminds me of like the introduction of the Master at multiple times throughout Doctor Who's history.
Mm-hmm.
Like several versions of the Master have done this. And also the introduction of Moriarty in the Sherlock series. Just very charming, off-kilter genius.
Mm-hmm. Terrifying,
mm-hmm. and yet so compelling. You're hanging on to every word, and yeah. he has so much to do. I would understand if someone felt like they were unsatisfied by just these long monologues and talking and exposition and stuff. I gotta tell you, I fucking loved it.
I was every into moment of it. I would go to that TED Talk. You know, like I would yeah. pay for that TED Talk. I was so into it. I found him genuinely compelling, and mm-hmm. I wanted to know what he knew, and he told it in such a way that I was like, all right, tell me more. Like, I just wanted to know more. I wanted to know everything he knew. It was, and the performance was maniacal in such a subtle way that, yeah, I don't fault that performance. I don't fault that character. At that point, I was just so excited. Like, we're getting real answers. And they may not be the real answers, but we're getting real answers at the end of this season. Thank God. And it's fun to watch.
You mentioned this in your review, pardon me, was how much of this show is just two people talking in a room.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'm a boring person, but I've always found that like the drama in a well-constructed dialogue scene of just, there are multiples of these.
It's the best.
Of Loki and Mobius talking mm-hmm. and like the back and forth and the natural drama that's created in those moments means a heck of a lot more to me than a long one-shot sequence of running away from buildings collapsing.
Well, we think about like Falcon and the Winter Soldier, it's like, and then they go here, and then they go here, and then they have a fight, and then they mm-hmm. go here because they have this information. Snooze alert. Give me, a season of, like, different groups of people, usually between 2 to 3, having conversations about who they are, who they think they are, who they think the other person is, and just, like, trying to figure each other out. Oh, hello. That is fucking good because it's really hard to do and really hard to do successfully.
Extremely hard to do, yeah.
But when it's done well, oh my God, I love it.
So He Who Remains
mm-hmm.
is more than likely, if not explicitly at this point, a variant of Kang the Conqueror, who we knew Jonathan Majors has already been cast as for Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumanium, whatever that movie is.
Did I know he was cast as that?
I don't know. We've known that for a while.
I didn't know that, but there you go.
That's been common knowledge.
I was so excited to see him. I was like, oh, that guy, yes.
So you, because there'd been a lot of, like, obviously, as there was with WandaVision, a lot of theories about where this was all going. And there was a lot of clues this is probably going to be Kang. But similarly, there were a lot of clues that possibly... what was the name of the demon guy that was meant to show up in... Mephisto was going to be in WandaVision. That didn't turn out, right? A few people were disappointed that it ended up not being the case. And so I think a lot of people, while they felt like Kang might show up, they didn't want to get their hopes up because WandaVision had sort of suggested to them that the big stuff's not going to happen in the TV show. Ha, 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 ha. The multiverse got ripped apart at the end of this season. the big stuff's not going to happen in this. My God. So seeing Jonathan Majors actually in that role, or at least a variant of that role, really legitimizes how important this story is to the MCU as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But does that is that reveal enough? All right. Is the reveal of He Who Remains, a character we've never seen before, and the promise of Kang, a character that unless you know the comics, you know nothing about at this stage.
I still don't know what that means, so keep going.
Well, I can discuss that in a second. Well, that okay, that works though. Let's go with that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm coming totally blank, so.
Some people felt like that was not thematically a payoff for what the series was leading up to. I think some people were expecting there was going to be another Loki variant or something like that. There was theories of like it being a Mobius, maybe ends up being his own Loki variant, or he's this guy who's been controlling this from the beginning, blah, blah, blah. But finding like a character they at least knew or had a connection to or something to help to try this all together at the end in an emotionally satisfying way. Instead, we're introduced to this guy we've never seen before. He's dead by the end of the episode. Was that a problem for you at all?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not in the slightest. I don't know who Kang is. I thought maybe it might be a Loki variant. And then we met this guy and I was like, who the fuck is this? But the character itself is so compelling. So you think of like people wanting it to be something. And I assume the people want it to be or is this Kang guy because that's a cool character with a compelling story. I've come into this totally fresh. Mm-hmm. This character is compelling to me, just in the way perhaps the first time you read about Kang was. You know what I mean? Like it's that same kind of thing. And it's not as though he arrives and he's dead. He's very explicitly said, when I die, there will be endless versions of myself who feel compelled to take over every universe that exists. It's a very clear threat, and he's already menacing in my mind. So for next season or upcoming movies, I am very scared. So no, it totally worked for me. I was into it.
It was a very end of The Matrix Reloaded. And I know The Matrix sequels get a lot of flack, but I've loved that scene with the architect talking to Neo and giving him the option between save Trinity or become one with the Matrix and save humanity. Mm-hmm. It's just two people talking in a room. It's mostly one guy talking in a room to somebody else, much like this scene was. I don't know why. I just really enjoy that, like, when the story can just, like, set up this impossible choice that our characters have to come to and then letting them figure that out.
Yeah, I was pretty interested in this idea of, okay, so this is the status quo, which is obviously very damaging to a lot of people. I'm going to talk to the victims of this exact status quo and be like, you can take over and perhaps run it maybe slightly better, but you still got to stick to the rules that I've set out, or you can create absolute anarchy and chaos. They're your two choices. What do you choose? Very exciting choice. I was fully there.
I think the other reason that the way the show this season ends, and why if it really was the end of Loki, the television show, this episode, I might have been a bit down on how it ended. But because of the enticing cliffhanger and knowing that there's more and we're going to get to... It wasn't just that they made that choice. It's that where they're going to have to deal with the repercussions of that choice and then discuss that choice and how they have sort of dealt with that choice internally going forward.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more than satisfied by that.
Yes.
I am not just satisfied. I am downright riveted, excited, cannot wait to see where they go with that going forward.
Agreed.
We haven't talked about Mobius at all. I feel like we're running out of time. We should start heading towards our ending. But mm-hmm. Mobius, the character, do kind of wish he got a little bit more to do in the finale, I must say. It's like he's sort of along for the ride. He was really involved early on in the season and then very involved in episode 4 and up until the point he get pruned, which, gotta tell you, fucking shocked me, didn't see it coming, and really devastated me at the time. In true Marvel fashion, he's back next episode. Same thing when Tom Hiddleston's Loki got taken. I was like, holy shit, what the fuck is happening here?
What do we do? Yeah.
It's like, they obviously they'll find a way to get around this, but what the fuck? But then by episode 5 and 6, I kind of feel like they turned off the Mobius storyline to focus on the other two.
I think this might be a victim of an original full season being cut in half. I assume his journey in next season, which I assume would have been the original latter half of season one, he will have a bigger role. But I do think, his story is kind of in that awkward middle pause. But I think we'll get a lot more from him from season 2. But I hear what you're saying.
He was just such a fun time cop detective character as well. Genuinely, like, smart and intelligent and just very easy to like, obviously, thanks to Owen Wilson's character. He's banded with Loki incredible. Their friendship building throughout the season fell for it instantly.
So sweet.
And his realization that he's a variant and that, I love that conversation he has in episode 2, I think it is, with Loki. And it seemed like a fun conversation, but like an odd conversation when they're talking about the TVA and like, do you question where you come from? Like, you existed and then you did your stuff and you didn't really question why you did it. That's just the way it is. And then to find out later that everything he'd be told is a lie and that he's a variant, he's been stolen from his own life, etc. And
the whole jet ski
to TVA
thing, you're like, oh.
The jet ski is such a brilliant... All everyone wanted was the final episode to be... Final shot to be Mobius and a jet ski. It's incredible. Such a silly idea, a silly image. It's so enticing. It's all we want for this
guy. I want Mobius as vacation dad. So we've got a Hawaiian shirt, some little board shorts, riding a jet ski, pulling on a little, those banana boat things? Pulling on a banana boat, Sylvie and Loki, like little kids on a vacation. Like they're finally getting the childhood they never had with dad Mobius. I think that's the dream.
Then the ending of the season is that Mobius just does not remember Loki. That by the events that took place in the void or at the end of time, the Citadel at the end of time, I think is what it's called. Loki has been either returned to an altered version of the TVA or a different time in the TVA, maybe before a mind wipe, because this is an idea that things have happened repeatedly and Mobius doesn't remember all of them. For instance, arresting Alligator Loki or Crocodile Loki and the ring stains on the table. So there's something going on there as well.
Well, one would assume it's a different timeline because of
it's definitely a different timeline Kang's because of the Kang face. Statue. Very Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
You idiots, you blew
you
it up.
You blew it up. Yeah,
exactly. Incredible tease as well.
Mm, so good.
But, like, that's heartbreaking to see Loki looking for him, and then who are you? Are you an analyst? Fuck you.
Fuck you. I'll kill you.
Any last words?
Final thoughts.
That's why you always leave a note.
Do you have any side notes, Damask?
I don't really. I've got one, I suppose. So we had, obviously, the episode where Loki goes into that place at the end of time. I don't fucking know.
The void.
Anyway, where all the Lokis are.
Yeah.
I bawled my eyes out in that final moment where classic Loki is building Asgard.
Yeah.
And the music is so fucking beautiful. Oh,
the music
I lost
was incredible
it.
Throughout the
I
entire
lost
show,
it,
but yeah.
Rod, that- in that moment, I was just, it flattened me. It for a period owned my soul. Like I was just so moved by that.
Why? And, why did that moment move you so much, do you think?
It spoke to this kind of idea that Loki thinks less than, and yet in this moment, you know, we see classic Loki sacrificing himself, and he is a beautiful, heroic person, and for him to demonstrate that, but also in that moment to, as a distraction, recreate his home.
Yeah, one, him making Asgard specifically one, is such a great choice.
Which I assume he hasn't seen in a very long time, was very, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it, was very moving to me, and I lost it.
Which is a pretty incredible thing to happen in one episode. We are introduced to Rich D. Grant's classic Loki in that episode, and by the end of it, he's doing that and you care enough about it. I think what was really smart also with that, though, it was kind of like giving your fans just a glimpse into an alternate like theory as to what happened to Loki at after his death in Infinity War, this idea that he was able to project this convincing illusion that even Thanos believed and sort of just disappear and live this extremely lonely existence by himself, you know, on some far off planet until finally he got pruned and then ends up in the void.
Well, wasn't it that, like, you know, he had kind of found some kind of peace on this planet by himself and then he wanted to see Thor, like...
Yeah, I think he planned to leave or whatever it was, and that's when they got him. It's like he was fine as long as he didn't interfere with everything else. But once he planned to be part of the universe again, he got pruned.
I found it very moving.
And just to address that, because that theoretically could have been the Loki that we knew from the MCU, right? Like the story he tells lines up. Maybe that was the Loki that we've seen.
I do not believe that Loki being killed by Thanos was a projection. I don't believe that.
I don't necessarily believe it either. But if you wanted to, you can believe who that was. Yes, and that can be, you've just watched that Loki sacrifice himself for this Loki. It's just the sort of timey-wimey rubbish that I love about Doctor Who that fed into this as well. So good. We would have been remiss to not mention classic Loki. It was so good, and Crocodile Loki and young Loki and etc. What a cast of amazing characters. I just love, so I don't want to talk about it, it's just Miss Minutes. I love that the character of Miss Minutes can exist and she works and the audience doesn't question it for a second. That's how far along the MCU is, this fucking cartoon clock Disney clock thing that's going on that has a southern accent, and you just accept it and go, this is a character in the show, and there is nothing to question about that.
But I also love that, like, they've created this character, and every time, like, you know, towards the mid to the end of the season, I'm like, what's this fucking bitch up to? What's she doing? I was so suspicious of Miss Minutes. I'm like, this fucking tickety bitch. Like, I was waiting for the big reveal that she was going to... What I really wanted, like, on the penultimate episode, was they go to that kind of fortress, that castle.
Yeah.
And it is not the cartoon version of Miss Minutes, but, like, a full kind of anthropomorphic...
Like a mascot version of Miss Minutes, like an actual one.
That's like in that felt costume, but if they do that, I'm going to be so happy. But I didn't get that, but that's okay. But part of me was really hoping that would be true.
I did love the scene where she was like offering this alternate like option to them before they even met He Remains. But just a lot of people pointed this out. That's a fucking proper jump scare. Like, the tension that builds into that scene, so much has gone into it to make you, like, this sense of foreboding. And this fucking orange clock with eyes just appears out of nowhere in front of you. It scares the shit out of you. Something really weird that happened. Weird coincidence. Before watching the premiere episode of Loki...
You ran into a female version of yourself, that is.
Correct,
weird.
Correct, that's right. And I'm now marrying her. But no, I was reading something. Someone mentioned like the theories around Mad Men, for instance, and how Mad Men was going to end while it was during its run. And I thought, I've never read any of these. I've just finished Mad Men. I've never heard what people's like theories were. The show was in motion, and one of the biggest theories was that Don Draper was going to end up being D.B. Cooper, this guy who did this heist on this plane and sort of just disappeared. Right, this urban legend, not even an urban legend, a real thing that happened. And I'd never heard of that before, or maybe I had heard of it, it was a million years ago. I never would have remembered it until like reading about the story again. The very next day, DB Cooper reference in Thor in Loki, I was like, if I hadn't read that, I would not have forgot the full impact of like what this scene was doing. It's literally just by coincidence I read about this thing fucking a day before. What are the odds of that happening?
Are you part of the timeline?
Possibly. Possibly. There's a lot of different things that are mentioned, sort of name dropped throughout Loki. They mentioned the Kree. They mentioned the Titans. That's Thanos' race. And they mentioned vampires. Just alluding to the fact that Blade's down the line, which is kind of exciting.
Vampires.
Which is how the vampires are generally brought forward in Blade as well. They're very much the spooky 30 stuff. Finally, how fucking dare they start episode 6 with that song? The MCU opening credits, and they play the song that's happening under Peggy and Steve Rogers reuniting at the end of Endgame.
Oh, I didn't even realize.
It's under the opening titles where the Marvel logo thing is happening at the start. And you can hear all the voices of the Avengers and stuff before it does that big, like, sort of sweep through timeline and space and stuff. They're playing. The first thing you hear is that fucking song. I'm like, you understand every time you play that song what it does to me, right? Where that transports me emotionally. Mm. Go fuck yourself, show. How dare you? Least favorite and favorite episode. What was your least favorite episode, Damask?
I don't actually have one, but I will give you one. I promise. I'll give you one.
Let's suggest you do have one.
I'm going to go with episode 4 because that's the one where, like, stuff happens and not necessarily great convos happen. That's my only reasoning.
Okay,
sure. So it's just a lot of stuff going on, really, okay. Like plans coming together or falling apart, but not necessarily, like, The bits that made me go, oh, this is some meaty dialogue that I'm experiencing. But that's my only reasoning for that. Yeah.
Sure. My least favorite episode is episode 3, Lamentus. This is the episode where Loki and Sylvie are sort of stranded on that planet together.
Mm-hmm.
And just felt like it had a couple of clunky moments in it. Early on, Sylvie and Loki are back in the TVA before they end up on Lamentus. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene where Loki's trying to stop her. She's about to get to the elevator that would take her to the timekeepers. And then as they're talking, she walks from being... So it was that Sylvie was closest to the elevators and Loki mm-hmm. was on the opposite side. She walks around him and then says, "You're in my way." I'm like, well, a second ago he wasn't. You positioned yourself so now he is in your way. He wasn't beforehand. That was unnecessary. I don't understand why you did that.
So your issue with the episode is the blocking. Is that what I mean?
It really annoyed me. Yes.
Yeah, cool.
No, you came up. What was yours? That was just the episode with stuff. At least I have a specific example. No, and the very end as well. The very end had that clunky long shot action sequence. One take. If you remember, it's when they get close to the spaceship and all the buildings are collapsing and stuff. And it just... It just feels very choreographed, right? It actually is a blocking thing again because, weirdly enough, because like it's technically, it's like it is working, I guess, but it just felt very manufactured. It didn't feel natural or actually exciting. It felt like actors hitting their marks rather than this thing is happening and they're reacting to it. And so little things like that.
Yeah.
It's funny, was a bit of an off-kilter episode too.
It's funny with that episode. That was the one I was watching where like the end credit starts with like, you know, the different font Loki and like the music started playing at the end of the episode. And I thought like, oh, that was really cool that they put the opening credits that far into the episode. I thought we had so much left to go because I was so engrossed. I'm like, well, they've got to get off the planet. And then I kept watching. I was like, oh, it's the end of the episode. Fuck.
It was a strange moment to end the episode, though. It felt like not an anticlimax. It just felt like you'd stopped in the middle of something.
Yes.
It's like,
totally.
Well, hold on a second. Surely this isn't the end.
Yeah.
What was your favorite episode?
All right, so if I can't say all of them, then I'm going to have to say episode 5. Like I said, I had tears in my eyes at the end. We're in this totally absurd world. Sylvie and Loki reach a new level of their relationship. We're so close to learning all of the truths or the supposed truths, which then leads me to what to say episode 6 because those truths are so good. I love the conversation between the season's bad guy and our heroes. I love that whole conversation. Loki's adoration of Sylvie is so compelling. Mm-hmm. The conversation about maintaining the status quo, but from a place of those that have been persecuted by it, is an intriguing take. Can I say episode 5 and 6?
No. Choose one. You must choose.
Episode 5, then.
Okay. Good choice. Good choice. Yeah,
thank you.
I'm going to say my favorite episode is episode 4, the Nexus event. How dare you say this is the worst episode of the season? How very fucking dare you?
But could you tell that I wasn't convicted in any way?
No, that's
like,
the only reason
no
why you get away with it.
There's no conviction there. Yeah.
That's the only reason you get
away
with
it. I just chose a random one. I was like, I'll say that. That'll make Brad happy.
I thought it was an utterly exhilarating episode from start to finish. It felt good to be back in the TVA after an episode away from it. I just love being there. And putting Mobius and Loki back together again, always great. They've been away for too long. Whole episode. Couldn't stand any longer.
Whole episode.
Lady Sif gets a nice cameo in there. Lady Sif's been hard done by in the Thor series. It was wonderful to see her again. Yeah. Mobius, the way he played and manipulated Loki in those interrogation scenes was brilliant. The Mobius being sneaky, getting the information out of Judge Ravonna, I think, and then taking the time manipulator mumbo jumbo was really clever. Like, just watching Loki plant the seed of doubt in Mobius and then Mobius being a good detective investigate that, I thought was just really, again, smart and effective. Then when they Then they pruned him and I felt all the emotions. Yeah.
And the Time Lords, whatever the fuck
they
called.
Then we found out the Timekeepers weren't real.
I take it back. This is not my least favorite.
Then they pruned Loki.
Yeah.
And I'm left going, what the fuck is this show about? And then the mid-credits scene where we see the Loki variants, including Richard E. Grant as classic Loki. It's like, that is a 10 out of 10 episode of television.
Well, you've made a fool out of me. I agree. That was a great episode. Yeah.
Predictions, hopes, and concerns. What are you feeling going forward? Do you have any thoughts on where things might go? Do you have any hopes or predictions on that?
Well, obviously, Judge, what's her name? The name we can't remember, is after, you know, some kind of power to get her own free will back. I'd be interested to see where her story goes next.
I think she's going after He Who Remains. Yeah. Was the feeling I got. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. So I'm excited to see.
Although maybe not the version that we met, a different one, but go on.
Because I wanted more from her throughout the season, so I'll be excited to see if we do get more of her.
Ravonna. Ravonna Renslayer. How can you forget a name like that? So I finally looked it up.
Cool name. Yeah. So I'd love to see that. I hope there's some way of, like, obviously this version of Mobius won't have the possibility of remembering Loki because I do think it's a different timeline, but I'm hoping that their relationship develops in much the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, man. I don't know. What about you?
I don't know. It's a good question because the hardest thing as well is it's not just predicting where Loki season 2 goes. It's predicting what the MCU looks like after this, because this has the franchise affecting events take place. So if we just think about if this was to continue with season 2 tomorrow, what would it look like? Mm. I think you're right. It's going to be a lot of Loki essentially trying to convince Mobius that, you know, who he is. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a reverse of what the first episode of sort of was, where Mobius knew everything about Loki and him trying to get Loki on site. It's going to be the opposite. Loki knows heaps about Mobius. He has to convince him that he's, you know, they need to work together.
Mm-hmm.
Sylvie, I wonder, obviously they're going to be trying to find her and figure out what's happening with the TVA. Either she is going to be working alongside, or she's either going to be in charge of the TVA, or she's going to be working alongside a variant of He Who Remained, or she's going to be on the run again, which is, you know, running across time, trying to escape possibly another one of these variants. Bad guy, Kang guys that we don't need to talk about in detail. Who knows? How involved is Kang, I'm going to use Kang as the shorthand version of this, going to be in this series? How involved is he going to be in the MCU? It seems likely. It seems like finding out that the writer of this is also writing Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness suggests extremely important in that, and that's going to tie directly into what's happening here. It seems quite possible. We already know this is probably going to affect Ant-Man the Wasp, maybe Spider-Man, No Way Home. Rumors being that Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield will be playing variants of Spider-Man in that film. Seems more and more likely by the second, especially when we consider that's coming out before the end of this year. Will Kang or some variant of be introduced in the Eternals? Quite possibly. Who the fuck knows? Neither of us have watched Black Widow yet. That's something we're planning to do tomorrow.
We're doing it tomorrow, yeah.
Which is exciting. Mm-hmm. And then in between all that, we have What If, the animated TV show, which now, which once appeared to be sort of like a fun spin-off, literally What If scenario, now could actually be taking place inside the multiverse we just opened up.
Yeah.
Like, it may actually be a part of canon now rather than outside of canon.
Mm-hmm. For all the big excitement in the moments of, like, what's his name, Evan Peters being in WandaVision, people being like, multiverse! This show has actually really done that and been like, multiverse.
Yes.
Here we go, guys. Yeah.
It does make me wonder. I hope people can go back and look at WandaVision now, maybe, because they were expecting that to be the thing that opens up the multiverse. And it was never going to be because Loki was. Whether people will go back who were disappointed by that now and go and look back with like, oh, I can't be angry with you anymore.
Yeah.
I just had to wait two more months.
Yeah.
I got what I wanted.
You're just doing something that I was not expecting. That's all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, but it is, I still reckon the problem was one of the things we talked about in WandaVision was like, okay, now we've done WandaVision, both Marvel and the audience needs to learn that the TV shows will never be those things where the big events happen. Except lesson the biggest learned. Event that possibly has ever happened in the MCU just happened in Loki.
It's huge. So, it changes everything. So, yeah.
Lesson unlearned. Expect everything it could possibly happen. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Hunting Seasons. You can find more of what we do via our website, huntingseasonspodcast.com. Our logo comes from Sean Kirkpatrick, a.k.a. at Shawnee Boy Draws. Our theme song and bumpers from Lucas Heil of Birthday Loyalty Club. Find links to their work in our show notes. You can also find myself, Broderick Gordis, on Twitter at BGordes, B-G-O-R-D-E-S, Damask.
You can find me on Twitter at Maskymo, M-A-S-K-Y-M-O-O.
Next episode, which will be at least 2, if not 3 weeks away, we will likely, but not definitely, but likely be back to discuss Sopranos Season 6 Part 2. In the meantime, thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Bye. Good night, everybody. Absolutely.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.